Thank you for coming back. This is the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. I'm Tammy Bang-Lu. And joining me here in studio is Arnardo Garcia, the Senior Program Associate for the National Network for Immigrant and Refugee Rights.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. So we said that we'd take on the issue of Bush and Kerry on immigration and look at the state of the immigrant rights movement. Recently, we just heard that the recent act in Congress, the Agricultural Jobs and Opportunities Benefit and Security Act, was squashed. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the Ag Jobs Bill would have given some respite to undocumented farm workers, you know, very limited protections, and being able to enter into a process that would maybe allow them to be regularized, their status, and so forth. But Ag Jobs, which was a Farm Worker Bill, and DREAM Act, which was targeting certain youth immigrants that were undocumented, that came here as children, maybe as babies, also have fallen victim really to electoral politic fevers, right, that both of them are bipartisan initiatives, but the Bush administration really has blocked and obstructed their passage. As a matter of fact, right now, this is the last week of the session for Congress, and there are attempts to get people to call the White House comment line and tell them that they should allow the debate to proceed on the floor so that Ag Jobs and the amendments could enter into the class action bill in order to be able to move the Ag Jobs. You know, this is so once the session ends on this Friday, July 23rd, it'll be off until basically Labor Day. But these bills, right, that they have, they're okay bills, right? They're very limited. They're not comprehensive like the one that was introduced by the Democrats back in a few months ago called the SOLVE. And it's a fancy acronym, but it's a legalization bill, which basically allows, you know, would let people to, that are, quote unquote, can earn their legalization and enter into a path, for example, of getting their legal permanent residency and eventual citizenship, which I think was a good deal given the climate and what's actually on the table right now in terms of ag jobs. And also Bush's pronouncement earlier this year, right, which was much more of an electoral campaign statement other than an initiative that he was going to seek in Congress. Because if you listen closely to what he said, he was talking about three things. Basically, he was going to, what he said was, what I'm interested in is getting people out of the shadows. They would register. They might go into some kind of guest worker program if they qualified. And even if they qualified, they would have to return in 3 years to their country of origin in order to qualify for another 3 years. And then after that, so it wasn't too clear what he was really after, other than it was a very ominous guest worker type program with repatriation attached to it in the front end and in the back end.
And so with Ag Jobs, it's a bit better. I mean, it says 100, if someone's been here 100 days within a 12-month period, yeah, then they get a temporary visa. And then if they've actually worked for 6 years, they get legal admission.
Yes, I mean, that's a very onerous condition, right, because it also locks them into the occupation, right? Being a farm worker, I don't know if anybody, listeners, ever worked in the fields, right, but being a farm worker is one of the most horrible, least paid jobs and least recognized, and it's one of the most valuable jobs, right, because everybody eats every day and you don't recognize that farm workers are essential to the U.S. standard of living. You know, eat and drink and all kinds of things every day. And they were getting a raw deal, but given the climate, see, the thing about the immigrant rights movement is that on one level we're trying to open up the legislative project, which under Bush administration have been very, very difficult, right, because of the congressional majority. On the second, you know, given the climate, that's a good opening. But the thing is, if we're able to get something like that on you know, passed or approved or moved further than it is now, it would actually create an opportunity for the immigrant rights movement to get some leverage with a really bad Congress that's not just bad for immigrants but has been really bad for working people, people of color. It's been a very hard situation. And it's also been a very divisive situation. You know, immigration is a wedge issue, and it drives people apart around a lot of different lines.
You talked a little bit about the DREAM Act. Can you, for our audience, mention what the specificity of the DREAM Act is?
Yeah, it has a lot of support, right, because it has this face to it, right? It helps, you know, children who came here to this country not of their own free will, right? They've basically grown up here. So the DREAM Act, if you had been here a certain amount of time, I think it's 7 years, and you had gone to high school and graduated, you would be eligible for three types of things, right? You know, some type of community service, including military service. Maybe some kind of vocational school or acts, you know, you have to be able to do something after you graduate in order to qualify and have been here a certain number of years and going to school. So that was really good, right? But it excluded the parents, it excluded other kids that maybe had, you know, didn't go to school, maybe just went straight to work when they were here, so forth, right? So even then, it still provides a small opening, right? Because right now, a lot of families, they have a lot of immigrant families. They include citizens, legal permanent residents, people with different types of visas, including undocumented folks. So when you have a situation like that, it really destabilizes community. Like the raids just happened here recently in Southern California. You know, 1,000 people got deported. And that literally means 1,000 families, 1,000 neighborhoods, 1,000 work sites. And then those work sites, you know, it sends shockwaves across the country. So it's not just about, you know, my brother, my sister, my mother, my father, my uncle being deported. It really destabilizes community. It sends a really ominous signal about because that's part of the debate too, because people are being criminalized. It's saying, if you get detained and deported, there's a certain 10-year bar that gets put on you returning to the country. If you return to the country for that 10-year bar, and I'm talking about with a visa, then you become ineligible for life, and therefore your family gets divided, families get split up, and it's affecting all nationalities in very severe ways.
Then there's other acts on the table. Talk a little bit about the CLEAR Act.
Yeah, the CLEAR Act has 122 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, but it only has 3 sponsors in the Senate. It hasn't really moved because it's also political football. But the CLEAR Act would basically give local, state, and federal police authority to act as immigration law enforcers. And it would also give them immunity, like, for example, from civil rights complaints if they violate somebody's civil rights, if they happen to, quote-unquote, accidentally arrest someone who looked or sounded foreign, right? So it's a really dangerous bill, but it's only a political pressure point that's creating space for other people because you can get states, other kinds of administrative county states, police departments can sign agreements with the Department of Homeland Security in order to get a training and to become authorized to enforce immigration law. And as you know, in L.A. County, the sheriffs are also seeking an agreement through the Board of Supervisors with the Department of Homeland Security to basically become immigration law enforcers. And that also is it also destabilizes community. For example, a woman who's facing her partner's a batterer, she'll be more afraid to call the police, right, because it could end in deportation of her partner, which she might not want to have his or her partner deported. Or if there's a crime or there's a fire, there's an emergency, people are less likely to call the police or the fire department. And this is not rhetorical. This is happening now where people, you know, they become prey to unscrupulous employers, unscrupulous landlords, unscrupulous, you know, shopkeepers, unscrupulous police, because people then act out thinking, yeah, these folks don't have rights of any kind or have these protections, and I can get away with being unfair or violent towards them. And that's actually not true. People, everybody has a certain amount of equal rights under the law. You know, if you look at our Constitution, like we were speaking with Ted Lewis before about the program, and the Constitution doesn't refer to citizens, it refers to persons. And that's a historical issue, right, because for a long time, people who were enslaved, African slaves in this country were only counted in a certain way in terms of electoral districts, right? There were three-fifths, right? It's the same thing that continues now with the undocumented. When they do the census, right, they suspend immigration activities so people will register, right? Because, as you know, when the census is taken, that determines a lot of the investments that come from federal monies, school buildings, sewage services, emergency services. So this is some of the problems that we face in our inner cities, right, where people are being undercounted or not counted at all. And it duplicates a lot of problems, right, it kind of deepens them, in other words. And the immigration laws, just to go back to what we're talking about, right, is they're not so much about immigrants because that directly affect people who are undocumented or have a different immigration status, but they're based on stripping or, in most cases, stripping or restructuring or restricting the rights of citizens, because that's where everybody's rights flow from, the citizen rights. And so it's like Prop 187. It wasn't really about immigrants. It was about privatizing services. And it didn't affect immigrants that much because they already, under the federal law, they weren't eligible for the things that Prop 187 was trying to deny them. So it's the same thing we're facing now with a lot of the laws, right, is that really is to create a different type of indentured class. But at the same time, it's an opening where people can struggle for their rights.
I mean, in terms of 187, when we see this, it's like it's a way to deflect from the public anger, away from the growing crisis out of this out-of-control free market capitalism,
exactly.
Right? I mean, just in the state of U.S., just the state of U.S. imperialism, just to say it, the purpose to divide the working class, ban ethnic divisions, and pretty much weaken the overall movement for full equal rights, as well as trying to consolidate a pretty racist and anti-immigrant majority, which is what Bush is succumbing to right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the enforcement policies and social at the border have already are a failed or a disaster. For example, Last year, in 2003, 409 migrant dead migrants were found on the border area. 409. And since 1994, almost over 3,000, at least 3,000, have died on the border, right? If you compare that, for example, to the Berlin Wall, which was in existence for almost 40 years, only 171 people died in the Berlin Wall in attempting to go from east to west Germany. In the Palestinian Intifada, for people that might know about it, only 4,000 Palestinians have died, and that's a different type of conflict, right? And in the U.S.-Mexico border, since they started counting bodies when Clinton implemented what's now the border wall policy, forcing people in the desert, almost 4,000 people have died. So we have the same type of social strife, right? If you wanted to call it almost like a war, you could, but even though that's not what's happening, because the migrants are coming to work, are usually coming to join their families and to work, and they're being forced to run through a gauntlet and risk their lives for really exploitive, 70-hour-a-week wage jobs, where they live literally in the shadow of people who are unscrupulous, and their rights are being taken away by people who don't even know that by violating their rights in the future, like police, including people who might be elected officials in the future, we will hold them accountable, right? Right now, we don't have the political space for them to understand that. But we do, because what they're doing is they're violating human rights left and right.
Yeah, well, without a strong mass movement, a strong social movement, a stronger left, that this is becoming a real difficult thing to try to move. I mean, what we're trying to understand is inside the U.S., they're courting the Chicano, Mexicano, the Latino vote, right? But it's also the class structure inside the vote.
Right.
So it leaves immigrant workers, the very lowest rung of the class structure, to be out. Just left bare.
Yeah. I mean, another way of looking at, like I mentioned, Prop 187, right? That was if you want to look at it a different way, it was a free trade law. In other words, they say we're going to privatize everything, and if you want this service, you're going to have to pay for it. A lot of the immigration laws have that, on one level, play that same function. They think, yeah, we want to regulate and we want to be safe and so forth, but they're doing it at the expense of the community. And you really can't assert your own rights by denying other people's rights, because when you deny other people's rights, you're really denying them what you have or what you think you have. So it's really important, right, for people to really think clearly about what is on the table. And it's very simple, right? On one level, it's just basic human decency. Like if you don't know the answer to what the problem is, or like you don't know what to say, the most simple thing is just to respond with dignity, as opposed to responding with any other way, right? Dignity, if you respond with dignity to any of the things that you don't know about, 99% of the time you're going to be right. Because if you respond with any other kind of emotion or any other kind of belief, right, that is not based on human dignity and human decency, then you're gonna if you don't know the answer, you're gonna come up with the wrong response and you're gonna pay for it.
Well, then it's the contradiction, it's the dilemma inside, because it's forcing immigrant rights organizations and the immigrant rights movement to be talking in terms of what would then appeal to a very reactionary, very conservative voting bloc. Mm-hmm. When in reality, we're not talking about the real issues like human rights, the self-determination, the actual violation of human rights that are going on currently. So it takes us out of that context, and it forces folks to have to then adhere to what may appeal to a conservative,
right,
which is just a losing battle. It's trying to help. How can we, in the movement, be able to put counter-hegemonic demands, demands that start putting the system accountable for its own actions, right? So mm-hmm. How can we actually force that kind of thinking outside the box?
Yeah, well, I guess what I was getting at was that human solidarity is in such high demand right now. In other words, just basic human, solidarity would be like sending a signal that, okay, yeah, we understand that we're in the same corner together. We actually might even be the same people together, because even though, we're different nationalities, we occupy the same, same spaces, of unemployment and the same housing, same access to the same schools. We're being overcome by freeways and not enough public bus transportation. We're being concentrated with certain types of access, certain jobs, and with that comes exposure to toxins. And, it has this, it's not a cycle so much as much as it's very planned about who gets to pay for the standard of living that some people get to enjoy.
That's right. Well, let's move on a little bit. I mean, we're talking about Bush, and we all know, that you're listening to Pacifica, right, that we're at the verge of really the central question mm-hmm. around the world is, what are you going to do about Bush? But then when you're looking at Kerry, it's just stated that in the Saturday newspapers that he opposes licenses for undocumented immigrants. So in terms of another choice, where's Kerry on the issue of immigrant rights?
Well, I mean, what he has said so much is not very promising. It's a little bit better than Bush, but not enough to, you know, to create any kind of wave of enthusiasm. The Democrats just issued their platform, and it has like one paragraph, and it's more of the same. And as far as I'm concerned, it's you know, they're definitely that hard-working, tax-paying, civic-minded immigrants would be eligible for some type of legalization with some future access to permanent residency and citizenship and so forth, which is better than what the Republicans as a whole have been saying, right, in terms of guest worker programs, registration, repatriation agreements, and so forth, which are already happening right now. So, and I hate to give troubling news about Nader, right? You know, like he did an interview with Pat Buchanan, and he was worse than Kerry and probably as good as Bush in what he was saying. He was basically appealing to some, you know, right-wing nationalists about, fair. He was against free trade because it damages the country, and in terms of a nationalist, as opposed to saying, okay, we need a fair trade and we need to redistribute the investments both across borders and into the inner cities. His message was completely offline, and I couldn't believe that he was saying. And he didn't think, I mean, I can see, you know, most of us probably don't listen to Pat Buchanan on his radio programs, but he can have different messages and expect that the Greens, and the Greens should be very, very, you know, cognizant of what that means to vote for Nader. I'm not saying don't vote for him or vote for Kerry or vote for anybody, right? But in terms of the interest that we hold in terms of immigrant rights, we're going to say, well, what's going to create the political space in order for people to be able to assert both even a minimal, a modicum of dignity, right, and be able to survive, first of all, which is sometimes the only thing we sometimes are expected to expect. And the second of all, for people to believe that we're equals, that we have the same blood running in our veins, that we have the same dreams and aspirations, and that we're not asking neither for special rights or for different rights. We're just asking for the same rights and due process, you know, to apply the same laws. And not change the, you know, like if somebody gets caught right now with under the 1996 law, the Illegal Immigration and Immigrant Responsibility Act, right, if a legal permanent resident commits a certain type of crime, they've been recategorized as felons like urinating in public, DUI, maybe you as a teenager, you broke into a car and stole a stereo. All those kind of things you make you eligible for deportation. And hundreds of thousands of people and families have been deported. Their lives have been shattered. If we just want equal, I mean, even if we just had equal rights right now, it would make things better. And a lot, even people crossing the border, right, having to risk their lives, that phenomenon, you don't need a new law to change that. You would just have to demilitarize the border, issue more visas. For example, if you're a Canadian, you can show up at the border, just show your driver's license, birth certificate, and you get an automatic 6-month visitor's visa to enter the country. But if you're a Mexican, you do the same thing. Not only do they laugh in your face, but you get placed on a 12 to 15 to 18 year waiting list. Even McCain, for example, you know, from Arizona, introduced a law earlier this year to give Mexicans the same considerations that Canadians get, right? Just to ease some of the pressure, right, so that people don't risk their lives crossing. But it was pretty, you know, came down in flames. And you know, so if you have a country that is being issued the same number of visas like the Dominican Republic, Mexico, or Canada, or other countries. And the demand is very high. You know, families want to get together. I mean, who wants to be married and not see their wife for 10, 15, 20 years? Or who wants to have children and not see them grow up? I mean, it's craziness. And people will then risk their lives, right? Because it's worth it to risk your life for those you love. It's worth it to risk your life, to survive with dignity, right? And people don't get that. It's not, you know, it's regular working class folk that are trying to just make a living. And their communities are being disrupted and displaced by our consumption levels, our standard of living, our pedal to the metal, you know, the highway, all the highways, you know, just getting here. You can see the problem, right? The consumption levels of this country are the root causes of displacing people. But at the individual level, right, you and I, we don't want to be separated from our families. So why should we expect other families to, you know, go labor away from their families for years on end and not see their families? You know, we're just asking for very, very small things.
Sure. But going back to Kerry, I mean, it's important that those of us even who will say we're going to do a strategic vote for Kerry need to be placing demands on him.
Like, yeah, definitely.
So it's not like we wait till the fella comes in. I mean, with the hopes, I mean, that if you're talking about getting rid of Bush and you're thinking voting for Kerry, that you're not going to wait till November, that the demands are supposed to be put on now so that the movement becomes stronger mm-hmm. after the elections. It's not the for the next few months.
Right. As a matter of fact, you can, like I'm calling for human solidarity, is what I want you to do is actually right now pick up your phone or write down this number and call the White House comment line and just tell them, press the message is to Bush to tell Senator Frist, who is the Senate Majority Leader, to stop obstructing the movement around the amendments to the class action bill to move the Ag Jobs Bill. Bush is obstructing it, right? This is a convoluted message, right? But that's how complicated the thing is. So all you have to do is call 202-456-1111. And then you just tell the comment line, says, I'm calling to tell President Bush to support the Ag Job Bill, Senate Bill 1645, and schedule debate on ag jobs as an amendment to other legislation. That's all you have to say. No, that's a convoluted message. But basically just tell Bush, you know, stop obstructing it, do something now, because the closer we get to the elections, the less likely that this issue will wait until January of next year. And if, depending on the outcome of the Kerry Bush, Nader, whatever comes out right in November, we're going to be in for a, not that we're not in a fight for lives now, but it might get worse or might get a little bit worse.
And again, that telephone number is 202-456-111. It's Senate Bill 1645 in order to actually get it to pass so we can start moving on the ag job. So we're going to be breaking for a minute, and then we're going to be joined. We'll have Arnaldo back, and we're going to be joined with Victoria Valleros to talk about attempts here to get a town hall meeting on Thursday to address the recent immigrant sweeps and attacks. We'll be right back.